Equal rights and justice is the motto.
Reggae music is God music, and so if it is God music, it is everybody's music, Rasta.
But we born racism, you know.
Revolution. All right, welcome to Punkonomics. Ooh, that was really loud. Anyway, yes, welcome to Punkonomics. I am Jesse Velez, the co-host for the show, and our resident host of Punkonomics, Dr. Benjamin Balak.
Hello.
And we have a couple guests today. We also have Felix Balak.
Hello.
And
Mitch Kepke, one of Dr. Balak's students in economics.
All right, we got the student representation here in Punkonomics.
And it is the first time we finally got a actually current student. I mean, we've definitely had alumni, which we look forward to seeing again as regulars, etc., depending on scheduling and things. But we never really got a current student in. I mean, they're all...
I think the ones that we had before kind of got afraid they might get fired at their jobs. And an employer listening to Punkonomics and stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's true. It's dangerous.
Yeah,
right?
It is dangerous.
The views and opinions. Those views and opinions, it's the truth.
That's right. It is the truth. And yeah, we're going to be talking about several truths here today. I do want to bring up a couple things real quick. I was watching the news tonight, and, it doesn't really faze me anymore. But last night there was a huge bust in Apopka, and it was concerning dogs. People were actually gambling on dogs, and not on the dog track, because that's a legalized, sanctified torture for dogs anyway. But these are dog fights up in Apopka, and I was very blown away by it. That's still going on, and the way I look at it, I'm an animal rights person. They should just get all those people together and say, okay, you're all going to have to fight. And the one standing, that one gets 25 years. So everybody else, of course, they'll die. But I'm for animals. So I'm not too much on humans. So what can
I
say?
No, I'd like to have the owners, the organizer and the owners fight, right? That's the thing.
That's what I'm saying.
Fight, right.
As a form of justice, have them fight and survive.
It's like bullfighting. I remember I went to a bullfight. My parents took me once when we were in Spain, like in the 70s here. I was really young. I must have been, 11 or something. And I remember just sitting there rooting for that bull, I mean, come on, get him. Just recently, actually, it was quite pleasant to see somebody getting seriously. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's not nice for me to kind of look at a picture of some guy getting what's the term? There's a term for it. I can't think of the word.
Gored.
It's my auxiliary brain other than Google,
That's amazing. And of course,
somehow I go, olé.
Tourists, by the way, folks, tourists have something to look forward to nowadays. Something else that I saw on the news. It's kind of shameful and sad, watching the news here in Florida. And of course, they criticize California for a lot of things. But now you can have your vacation here at the Ramada. And have a meth lab right next to you. That was the other bust last night.
I wonder, do tourists on meth actually stimulate the economy better than tourists?
You never know.
On margaritas and mojitos.
That's all about
possibly.
That's all cost about the unemployment here in Florida.
They can take Sunrail too if they have.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I guess Congress tried to pass some bill, a watered-down NSA bill to kind of, hold them back a little bit, which is just really another joke.
It's all about the spectacle. It's designed for maximum media impact, to make us feel good, not anything else.
And I want to give a quick shout-out to all you gun-toting right-wingers. Yeehaw! I haven't heard from you. You're not making a big stink over the latest shootings. I'm sure next week you'll go back to your,
we'll deal with that.
Guns.
Settle down, Jesse. We will actually deal with that. I mean, though it's really not the primary topic that I'm guessing we'll touch upon it as this progresses, but to be more honest, I think as this show degenerates a little bit later on. Because we want to talk about some pretty painful stuff and see if we can't shed our what exactly, I don't know, enlighten the views.
our chains are enlightened.
Yeah, but I was a little bit hurt by your comment right now. What about, you know, about right-wing gun-toting, you know? What about us left-wing gun-toting?
Them too. Okay, them too. Them too. Yeah, hey, you know, equal opportunity haters here. Them too. Hey, I'm not for taking guns away. I'm for education and making people accountable, especially those people who sell guns. Plain and simple.
Yeah, and it has to be said, we had a whole show on this way back. And you know, and I have this dubious honor that, I mean, I'm really kind of somewhat uncomfortable, but uncomfortable is what I'm comfortable with in some sense, if that makes any sense.
Which it doesn't.
It doesn't.
Yeah,
but that's okay.
But it's okay.
Yeah, making sense is really overpriced. It's a postmodern era, you know, consistency, all that stuff, whatever. But in all seriousness, remember it was like right after that horrible Sandy Hook shooting, right? That's what it was called, the school with the little kids,
actually,
right?
It was before that.
Or even before, right? That was even the scarier bit,
right? It was
the
Colorado.
One of our very first shows, so in the early, in the first version one, yeah, I mean, a year and a half ago now, almost, right?
Yeah.
I remember like saying, almost predicting, well, you think this is just a matter, this, nothing's going to happen, we're going to see there'll be more school shootings, we're going to have one every month in a kind of over-the-top way that I have.
Mm-hmm.
And oh my God, it's actually been more like two every month,
right,
on average.
Right. Yeah, I remember that show quite vividly. Somebody was trying to justify by saying that the farmers need their... Corey, this one's for you. I know you're listening. Corey had the nerve to say to me, who, you know, I'm very blunt. You know, I have just no coof whatsoever, you know, when it comes to candy corn and stuff. Corey was suggesting that the farmers needed their guns because they shoot golfers.
Gophers,
right?
No, golfers.
Well,
not quite. They
should be. Yeah, they should shoot them too. But
that's gonna be a topic for an all other show.
But yeah. Those are the rich people, you know, the golfers. But and I basically said, well, you know, what are they shooting? A mutant, you know, vermin out there. I mean, it's insane. It's insane to even try to equate that. But anyway, Dr. Balak.
Well, he made a rational point, you know, in the sense that when you get to shoot gophers from a distance, you have to, you can't be reloading your gun. You have to, like, go boom, boom, you know,
yeah, right,
to try and get one, which is, but Jesse did make me literally, like, I was work grading, actually, you guys, as well, you know, pretty miserable in the afternoon, you know. I can't have your glass of wine before you finish grading all of those things. And all of a sudden, Jesse sends me a message that combined this really horrible recent shooting,
right,
and we will go open that, you
kind
know,
of
if I'm allowed,
right.
You know my favorite metaphor, we will pop that nasty pot pimple, mm-hmm, a little bit later.
That's a disgusting expression.
It is a disgusting metaphor for a disgusting,
right,
topic, you know,
right.
I mean, I feel validity of vision, that was a concept in cinema actually in the 80s and the beginning of gore horror movies, the good kind, the far out kind, not the sick twisted kind,
like Reanimator.
Yeah, the days of Reanimator, you know, Evil Dead, the old Evil Dead, of
right,
course.
Right.
I don't even watch the new one. I'm not even dignifying it.
What a flop.
Evil Dead 2 is one of the greatest movies ever made. Yeah, I know. Not highbrow, but brilliant.
Yeah.
Anyway, I even showed it with the kids, you know. I mean, it's so funny, isn't it? It's a great movie.
Yeah, it was a good movie.
It's validity of vision is like, you know, don't be so dainty, you know, look at it, look at the horror, you know, and it's really important. I even have outside my latest hanged thing, other than the hashtag yes all women, on my outside my door in the office, was a picture about how, you know, when the Allies liberated the concentration camps and death camps in Germany after World War II, they forced the local inhabitants, not the officers or whatever, they were imprisoned, the local people from the local next door village, to come and see what was going on under their noses. And I think today we don't see.
Right.
You know, we don't see the consequences of our actions. We don't see that stuff. So I'm like, look at the bodies. Look at it, you know? Look at the dead babies, if you will. I know it sounds horrible and everything, but, I mean, we have to see it, because this disconnect, you know, that we live in this kind of la-la land is important. So hence my pimple metaphor. It's disgusting, but, you know, it is disgusting. What was I even talking about? Yeah, your joke, right. So you connected with this kind of stuff about, and then brought in like the comment about needing assault rifles to take care of gophers in the Midwest farming, and I just thought that was funny, you know, dark sort of.
Yeah, what next, drones to eliminate the vermin on farms? And,
all right, we need drones for that, right?
Yeah.
Well,
who knows? Maybe at some point in the future, if we keep using high-technology weapons on gophers, we'll be going to the gopher holes trying to fill them in, and then suddenly they explode.
Oh, you get miniature robots for that.
Yeah. You just have to send them in underground.
But here's a funny one for you. I just heard that, you know, since we put the sanctions on Russia over the whole Ukraine thing, I guess they're upset. So they're going to cancel our taxi up to the, you know, space lab.
Took them a while. I was like,
and they were basically saying that if we want to go up to space, then we can maybe buy a trampoline. I thought it was funny. Yeah, I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah.
But the truth of the matter is, that's what we get for outsourcing our work. I mean, all those jobs were here in Florida, and boom, they went. So, Senator Nelson, if you're listening, yeah, get on it.
Yeah, that was right. I mean, but I think we mentioned it before, but in some sense, this is a good piece of economics right here. It's a classic example, right? To do big science, to do space shuttles, space stations, send probes to Mars and Saturn, you know, this kind of thing, this is all done by governments. You know, it's not, that makes no sense for private companies to do it. It's too expensive, too risky, not enough reward. And the same goes for, you know, electricity, highway system,
right,
computers, internet, physics, electronics, transistor. I can go rattle on. In fact, all of our technology around us that we love so much, and we should, I'm a big geek, so I love it too, is at least by the most conservative measures in the 80%, by some measures in the high 90%, all public funded, that therefore tax funded, government organized, National Science Foundation, NASA, that's military. They do some good stuff, and we will soon get there to an angle on that. But it's a truth that is not spoken. A lot of people think, I mean, that the high tech, American high tech of the 90s is a private enterprise entrepreneurship thing. I mean, that's important, right? You have to take all that technology and combine it in an innovative way, like, you know, Steve Jobs, for example. But it's just a few last percentages of the trip, you know, from the idea of, you know, from who? From, didn't we, oh, God, senior moment. God, I need him here, yeah? Good thing we're on Wednesday. With Cosmos, you know, with the oh, God,
Michael Faraday.
Michael Faraday, you see, I mean, it's really the Google guy, you know, there's something to be said about wetware, as in brains. Yeah. Michael Faraday's, you know, observing magnetic field electricity for the first time, starting to think about the notion of harnessing, as Neil deGrasse Tyson said, oh, you see, I didn't forget his name, you know, harnessing the electrons to do our biddings, and all the way to the iPhone, you know, the vast majority of it is organized by government. And to go back to the topic, the space, right? So now President Obama said, when he was shutting down the Space Coast, more or less, that no, that's okay. We're going to have private companies contracting for this and stuff. And private companies have no interest in going to Europa. There's no money in it. They will go bust. It's not their fault. No, they're greedy. No, that's a mistake. No, what do you want? That's not their job, right? That's something you have to look at forward. The government going to collect money, hopefully in a reasonable way, etc., you know, and not, you know, use it. All the caveats apply, as we say. But otherwise it's not going to happen. We wouldn't have these things at all. We'd be horse and buggy, you know, if we didn't have this stuff, because
Daddy,
the private interest wouldn't do it.
Pulling yourself up by your bootstraps may put you at the top of the 1%, but it's not enough thrust to get you out of the Earth's atmosphere.
That's true. That's true.
That's right. And what we will find from this private space, there are companies who are, you will say, correct. You look, what about Space One? What about the XPRIZE? What about these private companies Virgin Galactic?
SpaceX, I think, is the one that the government is contracting for the United States space program.
Right, to get them to replace, you know,
replace,
but again, here's the government has to step in and provide mass funding to these guys, and then, sure, you know, it's all about capitalism. In fact, this isn't socialism in a sense. This is, or maybe it is. There's not, the distinction is maybe false. It's smart, you know. You do need the government for what government needs to do, and the private could be an excellent addition at a certain stage. But given all this technology and expertise, the private can organize it well, whether it be an iPhone or whether it be a new shuttle system.
At least for the commercialized part of it, you know, the private.
But private alone are all interested in sending billionaires you know, so we will have a hotel hotel. But we won't go investigate Europa, you know, that's not going to happen,
Daddy,
by
it's
private
like
interest.
In society, people, like consumers, want iPhones more than they want a new shuttle system, because they can't have a new shuttle system, but they can have a new iPhone.
All right, right. Okay, I hear you there, but that's kind of... That's a problem in a sense, right? Because you have to realize that you wouldn't have iPhones if we didn't do this kind of completely nerdy research back in the 50s.
Yeah, but the 50s, there was this...
You wouldn't know what we're missing.
The 50s and 60s, there was this awesome obsession with going into space and discovering
science,
new things.
But progress.
Today, being a scientist isn't actually a field that people want to do, mostly.
Well, yeah. Well, that's one of the problems, indeed. Neil deGrasse Tyson is like all over that, but you have to inspire people. And you have to realize that it takes this long effort to get there, because when you don't see it, you don't know what you're missing, right? So and even people like a Republican Bill Gates, give him too many plugs, I think, but you know, recognize the fact that you have to pay taxes if you're very wealthy, because he knows that he only did the last percentages working on publicly funded technology to get his wealth, and that's great, but that he needs to be funding the next generation of research, or we will not have this kind of infrastructure. That's really... It's shocking to me, to some extent, a big hole in general public's economic education, to think that, no, it's all private enterprise and wonderfulness, you know? No, not really. The facts are so inconvenient. But of course, if your motive is funding a think tank so that they reduce your tax, well, then who cares about the truth? But okay, before already 20 minutes, as usual, we kind of go on and on in our little rants and stuff, and that's okay. That's what we do, isn't it? But Mitch came all the way here instead of going to the beach or someplace where civilized people go this time of year.
He came to enjoy our air condition.
Yeah, it is cold,
exactly.
Nice and crisp in here, isn't it? Take it away. You've talked to... I haven't even read it, quite frankly, yet. I saw it coming in. I didn't get around to it because I was so fervently busy blogging all over the place this morning, so I didn't know.
Well, reading. I think it's a good segue off of the technology is that I learned a lot about how the military, too, is going more and more from troops on the ground to automation and technology, like things like drones instead of manned aircraft. There's also weapon systems like the defend carriers that are becoming automated. So more and more this technology is becoming important, and you need the government support because cybersecurity is going to become very, very important in defending these systems from hacking as it becomes more and more and more automated rather than manned. So you need the government investment to pursue that technology
further.
Hopefully not, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so now where do you get all this information? Where do you get? Tell me.
Well, I have a friend that's a member of the military, so I interviewed him. He's back for now, but he doesn't want to be named.
Oh, I can imagine that. I wouldn't allow it, even if he didn't realize what he was getting himself into, you know? So you have all this automation now. So you were saying, isn't though the military, and I'm like a foreigner, right? I always confuse. I say army, and you know, America, the branches are very distinct. I mean, obviously, they're distinct to some extent everywhere, but you know, most foreigners, just so people know, when we say army, we just mean the military, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or at least I do, because I don't know what I'm talking about. But isn't it increasingly run by contractors? You know, I know that this happens a lot and tragically and criminally even, I would say, at the low levels. You know, all these soldiers that get electrocuted by some kind of subcontractor in Iraq that made their showers and cut costs. And there's a really nasty stories about that of going on since this was pushed by primarily Donald Rumsfeld, who will go named because he is
Halliburton
up there
and
in the
Blackwater
list of really
and all those
nasty people.
Yeah.
So how does that what happens with this kind of stuff, with the high-tech stuff?
I mean, I don't know how it relates to the high-tech, but I know definitely contractors are becoming more and more involved. And an interesting thing that my friend told me was that there's a feeling among the military that they don't want to be associated with the contractors because a lot of times the contractors, people know them for the torture, the human rights violations, things like that. So it's like they don't want to be known for that. They don't want to be associated with the actions that they didn't necessarily commit that a private contractor might. So,
yeah. And I know also that, I mean, since you just mentioned, of course, some of our listeners are surely, as well as myself, kind of bristle when we hear the word drone.
Yeah.
But of course, this could even be linked to what the argument we might have later about gun control, right? With the notion of, you know, it's not guns that kill people, but I would, you know the saying, right? And it's correct, technically speaking. It's just that, you know, it's also correct that, yeah, but they sure help.
Yeah, exactly.
So the same, I mean, with drones to some extent. So what is drones? We're talking correctly, and there's, you know, Dirty Wars, Grinwald's book and documentary available on Netflix. Let me definitely a plug. I mean, we're killing people all over the world with no due process. Of course, one could say similarly that, hey, you know, even that, what's the polite word to call the guy that did those killings a few days back in Santa Barbara, you know, half of them killed with a knife. Yeah. Monster. I don't like the word monster. That was bringing Holocaust baggage into it, because no, people who do these horrible things aren't monsters. They're people.
I think these are people that crack, you know?
Yeah, you know,
it's a societal problem.
But the drones are often, it's not so much, I mean, there are private contractors involved, but often it's not the military or the Air Force, it's CIA, NSA, I mean, all of these shadowy, unaccountable people that are actually doing the job of doing it. So it's, again, it's outside. But it's interesting to mention that the traditional military, and I know in some cases, certainly in the Iraq, Afghanistan, places like that, have a resentment for these contractors that do not do the job with the criteria and just, you know, and overall decency as much as one can do that the regular military does, and they have no controls, and when they do horrible things, they get off the hook, and they're paid way more, orders of magnitude more. So the soldier is seeing the outsourcing, how, you know, getting shot at in Iraq, is seeing his job basically taken away, outsourced in front of his eyes.
Well, and it's kind of almost an option for a lot of these guys coming out of the military, because, you know, you're in the army, your pay isn't that great. You know, you live in barracks, and then you have the opportunity after you retire, a contractor might come up, say, hey, I'll pay you $120,000 a year. You go over to Iraq or Afghanistan. And maybe you don't commit the best acts over there, but they're getting paid a whole lot more. So it's definitely an option for a lot of these guys, unfortunately.
Yeah, and again, it all harkens, because I'm always, I mean, kind of, I guess maybe my focus and, I don't know, what I see better is not so much often the details. I'm first to admit that I need people to correct me. Just today I posted something and somebody quickly, that's great, that's when the internet works. Somebody quickly said, wait a minute, read this article. What you just posted is wrong, you know? And I'm like, oops, thanks, you know? And I updated it with regard to fair trade coffee. So it's good, keep drinking it. It's not a racket. So it's similar to, you know, seeing the big patterns, right? Where things are generally, how things generally look, that big macro vision, where sometimes I don't have time, or I'd like to get somebody to fill me in on the details. And, you know, around here we do whatever we feel like, really. But it sounds a little like the revolving door problem, which is a big problem I've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
So in some sense, yeah, if you're a sergeant or whatever, right, you're in the military, you have that temptation. I mean, why stay in the military, you know, when you might have the opportunity to go into the private military sector? And, I mean, your income will, and you have to take, I mean, you know, if you're not, how are you going to put your kids through college?
Yeah? Yep.
Or pay the bills, just never mind that, right? Things are very difficult. The military certainly is barely in the middle class overall, right? So they're really hurting hard, and et cetera. Of course, it seems, I wonder, I never thought about it, so I'm kind of throwing it out there. I don't have any formed thoughts about it, because the revolving door is a different animal. The revolving door would be the military procurement officer, right, that orders equipment overpriced often, you know, that maybe not what they need, or accepts equipment things that is not up to exact specification that they wanted from private companies, right? Because this is the position of deciding, but then it is understood that when he retires at 44 or whatever it is that they can retire first, I think, from the military.
20 years, I think, you have to put in for service for your retirement. Okay. So
then you get the job in the private industry. Probably, basically, then you are the one selling the same overpriced materials to your the person who was working under you in the military, so you probably know him at least, that he has respect for you, you have the contact, etc. And that has been happening in the military for a very long time, and it happens everywhere. I mean, that's how our environmental regulation is taking care of that. Net neutrality, I mean, the guy's like dealing the Trans-Pacific,
trade agreement.
I can't swallow it. You know, it's a trade agreement. It's what's sometimes been called, funkily, I think, NAFTA on steroids. But it's the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That's TPP.
Not to mention all that stuff sold by the ex-military contractors are usually substandard and have very, you know,
cost-cutting. It's private.
Yeah, so you can do whatever you want. And you can buy it from whoever you want, and like slave labor everywhere, and so much ability for sabotage or even just like human error.
Incentives are skewed here, right? I mean, that's where, you know, you have to look at the incentive, whether whatever economic system you're working on, incentives are core. But I mean, it's a big issue, and maybe we should probably devote a whole show to just to list through everything almost now is run through revolving door mechanisms. You know, the food industry, you know, is locked into who are they? Help me out here.
Talking about the FDA.
Yeah, FDA. Yeah. Thank you very much. Right. The Food and Drug Administration. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, the same person who regulates what goes into our meat knows that if he doesn't do his job, you know, he's going to get a job afterward, a lucrative job afterwards. And everything you see, there's nothing that's escaping it. I think that's the core mechanism of the failure of our economic system and the necessary government to run an economic system. So it's, again, that's the core idea of how the something that's already been articulated by Adam Smith back in 1776, right? When you have big government and big business in cahoots, that's the worst possible scenario.
Yeah.
Then the market system cannot work. It becomes, a pretty much a nightmare. A nightmare that most of us are living today.
And so far, it seems like an inevitable development.
Well, you know what? That's a great point, because that's kind of really the distinction, I would say, between a right-winger, a thinking right-winger and left-winger in some sense, right? I mean, if you're and I'm making a lot of reductions too, so sorry for all people who are like, wait a minute, it's more complicated than that. Of course it's more complicated than that. But essentially, if you believe in the free market, if you're, again, I don't like the word capitalist, because that implies that you are wealthy and own capital. So a lot of people call themselves capitalists, they're not, right? To be a capitalist, you have to be in the top 2%, you know, in America to be really a capitalist. Yes, I know we have 401ks and 404bs, but that's, please. So anyway, the market system if you're for it, if you think this is a good institution that should be, that is not doomed to destruction, to eat itself up, then you see that as precisely a problem that's killing it. This kind of misguided deregulation, the government for sale, revolving door, etc., is destroying the market system, and that goes back to Adam Smith, at least, if not the physiocrats before him. If you're a real left-winger, a Marxist, then you kind of are thinking, have a very persuasive arguments, I will say, that it's inevitable, that there is no escape, only temporary escape, and that too often on the backs of others, most notably colonialism then. That's what made capitalism survive an extra 100 years, and now it's collapsing. And I mean, seriously, even if you're not a diehard Marxist, people should be aware of this criticism, because if we are to save the market system, then we have to understand the people who have been very carefully studying how it fails, potentially at least, for a long time. So, yeah, highly useful knowledge. But that's where the argument should be.
Yeah.
What the right wing has called crony capitalism, which, it's but you can't avoid how to avoid it, if at all, if possible.
Yeah, that's the question that we face today, I think.
Yeah. It's a dynamic element, too. I mean, if back in the Clinton years we weren't so pathetic, because I like the equal opportunity hate, I mean, sure, I guess I'm more lefty than righty, but in some ways, wait a minute, I'm no liberal either. I'm, whatever I am, who knows. The inequality is so big right now that how do you roll it back? How do you deal with going back to a balanced situation where the rich are rich, but the poor have hope, and real hope, not manufactured hope with pills and commercials.
I think we're kind of beyond that, to be quite honest. I don't think the balance is going to go right back to being
difficult or visualize. Yeah, it's very difficult to see a sufficient mass movement arising. I mean, that's the only hope, hopefully before chaos, catastrophe, violence, civil war, things like that, because history is not, it makes me I'm not optimistic. I'm trying my best.
Well, you know, and here's the thing. I was trying to bring up a article that a friend of mine from San Francisco. Hey, Arvo. Quick shout out to Arvo Mukes out in Oakland, California. He sent me an article that was actually from the Huffington Post. And what they were saying is, we got callers. One second.
We like our callers.
We like the callers. WPRK, hold on for a second. What I'm getting at is that the article was talking about, and specifically in the black community, how new undergraduates coming out of college are not able to hold a job. And
Hold one or get one.
Yeah. And basically, they've narrowed it down to, you know, just downright racist. And this is Huffington Post. But, I mean, I can tell you that that's basically going around for all minorities, including myself. There's just no jobs out there unless you have a rich uncle who's going to set you up or a friend of a rich uncle.
Yep.
You're going to be flipping burgers. And they're even asking for more qualifications. So where do we go? I mean, there is no balance. For me to even visualize us going back into a pseudo balance, which is what we've always had before in capitalism, I don't know. I just don't see it.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, studies confirm this. In fact, I was thinking, and you know how it is, make plans on this show and get right. ready to throw them out the windows pretty much. But I was, we'll ad lib it. But so I was thinking of going. I made a lot of posts today, and actually a lot of people kind of liked them and followed them and retweeted them and stuff. And I appreciate that very much. Not just because it makes me feel important, you know, it's because why are we doing this? To engage in discussion and good functional argument. And we welcome opposing views and criticism, even nasty ones if you want. Oh yeah, call it. Don't forget that caller. But yeah, what he says is absolutely borne by the facts. I mean, the racism, if you will, in the labor market is horrendous. And we think today that it's particularly nasty. Sure, it's true. Okay. But it's been particularly nasty for a very long time, too. So it's even in the good old days of the 90s and such. It was very bad, very bad indeed. So your chances are nil.
Our caller wants to know if there's been any talk about global currency to alleviate this problem. Have you heard of anything like that?
Well, actually, you know what? That's great question. So you guys helped me out, you with the plastic brains, not in the sense of petroleum-based product, but in the sense of, you know, not rigid and brittle and old, to keep me on track on that, because that's really an interesting question. I did actually post a buddy of mine from grad school who is a challenger, one minute lecture, and he's a serious researcher on racism in the labor market by the numbers. So this is something that should be remembered, that the facts are that opportunity is horrendous by the numbers, as scientific as we can get, the lack of opportunity, and the inequalities, in it. So what Jesse was saying, is absolutely borne by the facts. Global currency, and even more interesting, yeah, we're not gonna go on Bitcoin, you know, story. It's not even that interesting, quite frankly. I mean, no, it's interesting, but it's not, you know, that exciting. Well, not really, first of all. Yeah? I mean, it's regional to some extent, right? I mean, how would you be able to do such a thing? It's a chicken and egg situation. In order to have some kind of even weird, complex financial tool, global finance, other than simply adopting a pre-established currency, most notably the dollar, of course, but there's some contending now, especially since we've managed to alienate the Chinese and the Russians at the same time, so they're definitely having a good time chumming up together and talking about how to undermine the dollar. But, you know, what do you expect them to do? You know, they have to defend their own interests. You couldn't unify. Look at Europe. You know, they really tried.
Right.
I put to you that it could, it's not, it wasn't, we were arguing back when I was an undergrad, yeah, late 80s, there were a lot of arguments about that sort of thing. You know, is it even viable? How can you unify countries that are much richer than others? Not just richer, more financially stable, different structures. How could you harmonize? That's the term, that's the kind of the technical term. Because there will be a lot of possibly anticipated, predicted effects, and also surely a lot of unexpected effects. And we've seen a lot of troubles, right? We have the pigs, as they are We were like pretty disgustingly called by you know, French, German, and Dutch, which are kind of ruling it over Europe these days. Again, governments. Let's not put in all the people in this. The country, pigs are Portugal, Ireland, Greece, and Spain. Countries that are... And Italy is kind of trying to avoid that club, but probably belongs to it to some extent, too. It's just Italy is big and rich. Yeah, and they're still floating up there. You know, they're hanging in.
And they're still trying to figure out who's the prime minister.
Well, something to be said for that, you know. As long as they got rid of that, you know...
They got rid of Silvio,
pedophile... creep, you know.
Was Silvio the pedophile? Or
yeah.
Oh, he was.
Well, yeah.
So he was engaging on prostitution and all that. And
his 15-year-old supermodel 15, wife or something?
Yeah.
But he had a great voice.
Oh, surely. No, he was charismatic, all right. What a...
He did. He
can
was singing
I say D-O-U-C-A in the radio?
He was actually singing in cruise lines before he became the prime minister or president.
He's really, I mean, come on. In defense of all my Italian friends, I'm a big Italophile, you know. I love Italy. I know Italy, or at least some of it. And going there soon, yay. But, you know, poor Italians, it's really embarrassing. I mean, you think it was hard to be American with George W. Bush? I mean, think of him, you know, electing him again and again and again. Of course, he owns all the television personally, you know, stations, so that helps.
That's right.
But anyway, back to our listeners' serious question. So, okay, we have a problem. How would you have that? Because, indeed, in the process of monetary unification in Europe and eventually issuing the euro, you had a problem that... There was a flow in multiple directions. The hard, the rich countries with this very stable, powerful economies, mostly Germany, of course, pretty much almost alone, basically lent its excellent currency, the Deutsche Mark, to the rest of Europe. So basically everybody adopted the Deutsche Mark under very strict conditions, and they called it euro because they wouldn't be willing to adopt the Deutsche Mark. Yeah. History. But that lent financial stability and low inflation to the financial sectors of the other European countries, all right? Now, who benefits from that? Keep that in mind, yeah? But at the same time, that stability that belongs in a wealthy, well-evolved, highly unionized, by the way, so people are getting high wages with excellent benefits relatively, etc., in Germany, you bring that effect into the financial sectors of countries that are not as, you know, wealthy and successful and developed or whatever we want to call it exactly. Well, that leads to rise in cost of living, yeah, and deficits very quickly. Hmm? In a large sense, the financial unification of Europe was run by the quote-unquote banksters there, yeah, for their benefit. Now, we should have seen it, and a lot of people, I think, were well-meaning in this, to neoclassical economics view, you know, not seeing the real nitty-gritty of the economy, the political economy. So it seemed really lovely on paper. And there were attempts to deal with these issues, but, well, they pretty much failed, right? So the minute, when we were in a boom in the 90s, it was nice and stable. In the beginning of the 2000s, it was nice and stable. The minute the first big hit happened, boom. There we go. It kind of collapsed. And now, just a few days ago, we have a big surge in anti-European and many of them frighteningly right-wing parties being elected in Europe to the European Parliament. So now, let's zoom even further back here a little bit. I promise to say it pretty much every show, right? What we call globalization is a sham. Simply because if we're talking about global free markets, we can't have capital, remember, that which is owned really by, in the global perspective, less than 1% of the population, being free to flow to the most productive regions, be flexible, in other words, able to adjust, take advantage of opportunities, while labor is fixed, right? Because you may have noticed, you know, you either become an illegal immigrant if you cross the border illegally, or you don't have the right to work, or you have to go through specific loops to get that right to work. So the borders are closed. So those of us who own our labor, right, and therefore need to work for a living, have no free market, global free markets at all. We have border controls, yeah, for us. Now, if we are fortunate enough to be at the, or to be of the wealthy classes, the very tiny minority of the population that live off the interest of their capital, of their wealth, I mean, not that they don't work too, you know, but that's the source of their wealth, real capitalist, then you can move the sources of your income anywhere you want, from America to China in a fraction of a second, if that's where the returns are better. Yeah? So the whole thing is a sham. If we talked about global free markets, we'd have to have no borders. That probably scares a lot of people, right? Maybe it shouldn't, you know, but if that's what we want, if we want global capitalism across the world, free market, la 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 la, no borders.
Well, at least there's one benefit to that, is that if there's no borders, there's no more illegal immigrants.
No, absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. So, now, maybe I'm idealistic here, right? I'm idealistic. You can't just do that overnight. It's going to cause too much turmoil and problems. And look at the xenophobic Europeans, you know, that are going on a racist rampage. I mean, it's really ugly.
And we might even run the risk of, austerity again.
Well, I mean, are we running the risk? Are we in it?
Well, I mean, you know, if we did a globalization that type, you know, with a global currency, we might face that. We might run into that too.
Eventually, though, it's a goal. You know, I mean, I could definitely see the issue, but it's not separate, right? You'd have to deal in order to have a global currency would be part of a, you know, unified global market. Yeah. But in order to get there, it's a process. But again, the racket now is that capital has been rapidly opened up. There used to be limits on the flow of capital. You know, there are in some places still. But less and less. Globalization has become opening up capital for free flow. That's what it is. That is a racket. That is a racket by and for the proverbial 1%. That's not free markets. Mm-hmm. If you wanted global free markets, you'd need to gently and slowly, as the European tried and haven't succeeded so well, for several reasons. But, you know, I give them credit for trying. They also opened the labor markets, you know, so you could move between countries. Sadly, that quickly became a way to, you know, use cheaper labor, to have labor compete against each other, to lower British labor by bringing, Polish people who were underpaid over there and didn't have job opportunities. And incidentally, back to our previous show, the one from before, the deal that European Union tried to bring to Ukraine. And when that didn't work, America and the European Union staged a soft coup and took over the country and put in a hard right there. And there's a civil war. And I know, you know, I might tick off some people about that, but it's been an ugly, nasty story, I think. And the people in Ukraine are the ones who suffer, of course. Well, now they're going to get their austerity.
Right.
In many ways, what the people in the East are fighting for. They're not just nut job terrorists, you know, who hate Ukrainians and are Russian nationalists, though I'm sure there are some of those. They are fighting for not becoming the slaves of Western Europe in some sense, not getting austerity. Austerity, by the way, is a term that, do we use it in America? It's a much more of a...
We have some
budget
other,
cuts.
Yeah, budget cuts. Yeah, the candy coating version of that.
Yeah, it's when you cut taxes for the rich and cut food stamps for the poor.
But, you know, my point of last week when I was saying that sanctions do not work, it's happening right now. Russia struck a deal with China, you know, for gas. And they're going to do it.
Well, it did work. They managed. I mean, right, they took over. They made their elections. I mean, Ukraine is slowly but surely, the coup succeeded. The coup to take over Ukraine and turn it into a client state of Europe and America. And I always like to annoy the European among us with the fact that, you know, Europeans often like to be, yeah, we're anti-American, hell with Americans. America says jump, Europeans ask how high.
Exactly.
Not the people. I mean, you know, people are people everywhere.
And on that note, I want to remind everybody that we do have a phone here. It's 407-646-2915. And we're going to go ahead and play a little bit of music here. So get everybody jumped up.
Something about a unified, you know, global world where there's no borders, no class. You know, we all wear white robes and fly in space.
Hopefully.
You wouldn't want to wear white robes to fly in space.
I've created a monster.
I know you have. Here we go. Oh, yeah.
Fighting the nation with their guns and ammunition. From Genesis to Revelation. The next generation will be hearing me. From Genesis.
And we are back here at Parkonomics.
Ooh, yeah. Okay, so as we were talking, right? So, you know, and we actually, you know, we I told everybody to shut me up, you know, but it's hard. I know it is. But it's doable. So we talk about globalization, how it's a racket. You know, we had a caller talking about this notion, I mean, that we could possibly a global currency. It could be, as I said, I think it could be part and parcel of a harmonious global economy, but that's not what we're getting. Now, we will devote more serious time, but I just wanted again to mention the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is the next stage actually precisely yet further integration of the global economy, making it more smooth and less regulation, etc. But in fact, the problem is, again, is it a bad thing that countries join and coordinate their efforts to trade? No, trade's a great thing. But, well, it depends how it's done. The devil's in the detail, yeah? So just like NAFTA could have been a good thing, imagine, you know, a free market in North America. But it didn't. It devastated the Mexican economy. It had some pretty severe impact on Canada too, in some senses. And it lost a lot of jobs in America. Again, I'm not going into details here, but in fact, Ross Perot, who was called a cuckoo back in the day, turned out to be pretty right on the money, and with his dire predictions. And at the time, I was fooled by a lot of it too. So this is next stage. It's run again, not in the interests of everybody by a representative government of some kind, but in the interests of multinational corporations who rule America and not only America, via the messed up electoral system, and just by virtue of the fact that we've allowed them to gain so much power, too much power, you know, there's too much balance. So that amount of power means that they are unchecked. They can do whatever they want, you know, trash our seas and not have to, you know, pay pittance and fees and get on with their lives. Destroy our economy, get bonuses for it, etc. So this is something that will be talked about significantly and should, this new agreement, because it is done in the worst possible way, and it is done in hidden. I posted a bunch of stuff on it. It's hidden. It's actually fast track. And we only know some of the details thanks to WikiLeaks, because as Senator Elizabeth Warren mentioned in a speech a little while ago, if Americans were allowed to find out basically what's in it, they would be in the streets against it, left, right, most everybody. So because they're right, because it's against their interest. So you see, trade can be good. Global trade can be good. Unifying regionally and potentially with a vision of a unified global economy is a wonderful goal, potentially. But it has to be done done well for the interests, to some extent, of a majority of the population. And maybe compensating the losers with the gains of the winners. I mean, if we sat down together, human race, very intelligent creatures, we could come up with solutions to all our problems. But we're not sitting down together. We have an elite that, just like in the pre-market era, in the feudal days, well, not even, frankly, they were never that bad. But in some parts of the Renaissance, these Machiavellian warlords who are, you know, running... riding roughshod? How's that expression?
Yeah, basically, riding roughshod
over everybody else, and not thinking even of their own long-term benefits. I guess I assume that when they finish to trash the place, they will just lock themselves up in some kind of... maybe in space, right? They'll go out in space and some in satellites and leave us all... Oh, yeah, I saw that on the plane. Elysium, the movie?
Oh, yeah, that movie.
Not bad. Oh, not as cool and gritty as District 9, but which I highly recommend. But I enjoyed it. I thought it was a nice balance.
It was pretty simple.
Yeah, but, it, you know, okay. You know, it's a much bigger kind of... Still, you know, I thought it had a nice message.
An interesting concept.
And, yeah. Somewhat not original. If you read a lot of science fiction, you're kind of like, I've seen this before 100 times and stuff. Yeah, true, but not in a big Hollywood movie with, like, you know, buff, sexy... guys, so to attract the masses. Oh,
what message was that, by the way?
Well, you know, the inequality, things like that. Oh dear,
Juliet.
Well, it looks like our next segment is upon us. So I was, like Mitch was telling me to say. So you know, I mean, well, you say it.
Come on,
guys. There's wires and stuff. Yeah, I just have my wife, my daughter, her friend,
and
two dogs showed up in the studio. My dog.
The next section is going to be Animal Planet, right?
Animal Planet, right. Yeah, good girl, good girl. Settle down. And you know how dogs are. They're all very friendly and happy to be here.
And I want to say hi to Dr. Trinket. She is the host of one of our shows that we had here, Secrets of the Fairies. I'm sure that those of you that listen to Punkonomics are also tuning into that show. How you doing?
And we'll bring it in through the back door or something, right? I mean, we'll have
very good. Thank you.
Welcome back.
Thank you. Yes, it's good to be back.
Yeah. So I mean, no, it's good timing actually. So, what was it? A nasty thing that we were really
We're gonna go.
I mean, so if we're still, and we'll pause for music and get organized, maybe, you know. But the issue was that, you know, if we have our global institutions, our governments, our multinational corporations, the big guys, the leaders, are running this kind of warlord model.
Stupid dogs.
Strong.
Yeah, are running a warlord model, you know, raping and pillaging the economy. So how do we expect our youths to behave? What example are we giving them? This is precisely we've abandoned that necessary ethics of capitalism, of free market, which is, as Smith pointed out, and one of my gurus, Deirdre McCloskey, did the ethics of prudence, you know, temperance, balance, and such. So that's perfect timing to, you know.
Yep, we're gonna go on break here and do our the required PSAs and
we'll
station identification
with some feminism in your face.
That's right. You're listening to Punkonomics here on WPRK Winter Park, Florida, the voice of Rollins College and the best in basement radio. We'll be right back.
This is Oliver Stone. Thank you for listening to WPRK Winter Park, Florida. There's no profit in this form of media. Enjoy it while it's still free form.
The views or opinions of the station, its management, or employees.
All right, welcome back to Punkonomics, the one show that likes to talk about all the irritating things that people don't want to talk about, right? Anyway, we do have in the studio quite a few people here, and we're going to try to work around it, but we're going to be talking about feminism in many ways related to shootings and everything else. Okay, here we go.
Yeah, that's a nice intro. Feminism related to shooting. Yeah. Well, that's pretty much right. Okay, so first of all, just for context, right? If you haven't been, disconnected in some sense, there has been a nasty shooting of this guy who.
Shooting by this guy.
Yeah. Then he shot himself a little late after killing six people. But then we mentioned the notion. Maybe we'll touch upon gun rights and all that. But maybe it should come up. But it's really too much is done about that. To some extent, I think others can take care of it, or we take care of it another time. We do have, two 12-year-old girls in the studio so that can talk to us a little bit about, the pressures on young, budding women and growing up in our society today. yeah, say hi. we'll introduce you more in a moment. I'll introduce them now. So one of them is Talia, my daughter.
Hi.
The other one is Sophia, her best friend.
Hi.
And twin.
Not really.
Well, not even sisters, but
really,
spiritual twins.
Spiritual twins, something like that.
They're the twins.
Not even remotely genetically identical.
Like in
Mary Kate and Ashley Olsen,
physically identical. Like
yeah, they
grandparents
look alike.
Can't figure them out.
Wow, that's
not for real.
Embarrassing. Wow.
Yeah, I know.
A bit rough.
It is.
But there was a horror. There was a big response finally, which is quite that made it beyond the kind of feminist circles to this shooting and to the notion. This guy that basically said that he shot women because he was disgruntled that he wasn't found attractive by a lot of girls. I'm the nice the argument. And I posted a hysterical but very vulgar video by Jenna Marbles.
And for those who haven't been paying attention to the news, it's actually a shooting that occurred last week at the University of California, Santa Barbara. There's a lot of talk right now, of course.
It's a hate crime.
It's definitely a hate crime.
Women because mm-hmm. they weren't romantically interested in him, and he figured that he's the good guy, and why does he get all the pretty girls?
Felix?
Sorry.
Okay, thank you. As a person who is on her phone 24/7, most of the people like on like funny like things where they're supposed to post funny things and stuff. Yeah. But like special types of social media like Meme Droid and Cheeseburger, they're always complaining about how girls aren't like, dating them and stuff and mm-hmm. it annoys me a lot.
Right, and they feel entitled to it.
Yes.
Right? That's the thing. That's what Jenna Marbles really, rips into them in a with much vim and vigor. Very, very good. Worth all the vulgar language if you don't like that sort of thing. I tend to tolerate it quite well. But it's male privilege, essentially. And women started this hashtag, the biggest, I believe, in Twitter history, hashtag yes all women, which was in itself a yes all women, right? Which was in itself a response to hashtag not all men. Because a typical response of people and where it relates to male female, it's a very similar to the dynamics of white black, by the way. There's this privilege notion. Oh, but I'm not a rapist. But the problem is, yeah, sure, of course, it's a minority of men that are rapists and
pedophiles and
nasties
kind of
different kinds, yeah, or shooters and psychos and you name it. It's a very small minority even, thankfully. But they live, first of all, in our culture that might cultivate it increasingly. But, and above all, while most men are not concerned, all women are. Because due to that small minority of guys that do behave like that, all women, hence the hashtag yes all women, have to live as if they're in a war zone in our rich civilized so-called civilized world.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Oh, you mustn't dress any way you like because it's dangerous, right? Because you mustn't go out at night because it's dangerous.
It's
you
a
have
similar
to,
thing to like how you taught us to worry about drivers. Like, if we're pedestrians and we're on the sidewalk, not all drivers are murderers who will, like, the second they see a person go, like, into a frenzy of rage and drive off to the sidewalk to try to kill us. Mm-hmm. But if there is a person like that, we have to always be on the watch.
Right.
But here's something, too. Because of those few men out there, men in general wind up paying for it because it goes to an extreme, okay, like in corporations. Okay, the whole personal development, you know, the sexual harassment, it goes to an extreme. I mean, instead of solving the problem, it goes to an extreme where people who are not sexual harassers wind up getting caught in that whole feud. So, I mean, we also have to look at that side, too. Because,
you know,
we can say, okay, it's not all men, but then at the same time, most men wind up getting the wrong end of the deal, too,
because of these. Actually, it doesn't happen. I mean,
well, in corporations, you do.
Well, that is because, right, the result is not dealing with a core problem here, you know, a very deep societal division of the problem. And instead, you know, you think that by having corporate rules of conduct, yeah, you know, I mean, the fact that we're not allowed to make lewd remarks and it's not considered entertaining and funny anymore, I mean, that's fine, you know. Some people like to watch Mad Men. I don't know. I never got bit.
Yeah, I knew.
Right? I mean, it's not a happy world. I mean, you know, in fact, I think a lot of these spiritual buddies, a lot of guys that don't go out and shoot girls like that guy did, mm-hmm. still... And that is the case. There's mass amounts of growth in these websites and institutions are about men's rights and such.
I love Mad Men's.
Yeah, I know, but it's a nasty society going on there. I mean, it's not pretty.
Yeah, that's probably why I like it, because it reflects exactly our, you know, the reality of...
Yeah, right. It's a commentary.
Right.
Yeah. I should
and
hope that's the case,
right?
It's
a cute one, too. I mean, it's...
So you see something that's sufficiently far away from you that you can say, oh my God, this is so sexist. And then you realize, but wait a minute, is it so much better today?
Right.
That's what's going on.
And that's what I'm getting at. I mean, it goes to an extreme. I mean, we try to do all the good by implementing certain rules. But, you know, in the workplace, I mean, having come from a corporation, I've seen it where a guy can say something very innocent between him and a friend and a third person listening to it can right away claim that it's sexual harassment. And the guy would not be found or at least kept innocent until proven guilty. Mm-hmm. They're right away guilty, period.
But if you reverse it,
if a guy goes to the corporation and say, hey, I was just sexually harassed by this lady over here, they probably would laugh at his face. And that's the world we live in. And that's the
very
truth.
Good point, yep.
And that is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to be very conscious about that. You know, needless to say that, you know, we have to cramp down on these, you know, deviants, you know, these people that are doing...
No, I would say it's more than deviants, though, in some... Again, you know, I think it's broader than that. I mean, there is that element, absolutely, of the extent of violence, but there's also still, you know, the images, the fact that, you know, only 15% of all movies have a major female role, that we have like Victorian gender roles being reinforced by Hollywood and TV, with very few exceptions. I don't know, in the schools?
Wait, what? What about?
Well, I don't know. What do we
I've been
say?
Trying to say something for a while. Okay. A lot when I get Amber Alerts, and if you don't know what those are, they're when somebody gets kidnapped, your phone gets like a message with some information about it.
Terrible.
Yeah, and I get a lot of them for living in, you know, Winter Park, which is a pretty good neighborhood. A lot of the times...
Florida-wide, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a great system. I mean,
well,
at least
it's mostly it's in where you live, closer to where you live. But a lot of the time the kidnapper is a male and the kidnappee, is that, can you say kidnappee?
Yeah.
A kidnappee is a girl, like a young girl.
Yeah, right. And also they also say what kind of vehicle and like what color. Uh-huh. And they're not cheapo cars. They're like Porsches.
They're a good car.
And like
yeah.
Big Toyotas and stuff. Generally, it tends to be, I guess, rich men who kidnap young women.
And that's usually the profile, actually.
Yeah.
No, it's often family feuds and things like that. Again, I mean, we have a lot of, and I want to read a couple of statistics in a second, but there's also the general impact of what the expectations are. You know, like, you know, poor Talia is banned from Disney and Disney and
I want to watch Sweet Life on Deck. I want to watch Sweet Life on Deck.
Why?
Because it's amazing.
It's the worst show.
You're the worst show.
Yeah, well, we can argue about that later. But, I mean, no, I find that these things are reinforcing really nasty stereotypes. But the reality out there is pretty ugly. We can talk about media and violent media. And I got to say that, I mean, mea culpa, you know, I like violence in videos, in video games.
In movies.
I enjoy, in movies, yeah, I enjoy it. You know, in twisted TV shows, I like it. But I've been looking, I mean, hearing people talk about it, I wonder, maybe, I mean, really, maybe it should be somehow more limited or even eliminated. Too bad for my personal pleasure, because maybe it does have an impact. Now, we have to be careful about it, because where, and like we said, you know, where do we look, for example, our leaders, whenever they have an argument with somebody, what do? Bomb them, you know? So it goes all the way to the very top.
Well, I have a few feelings about that because, you know, on one side we're saying, okay, video games and movies don't cause all this violence and all that. But then by the same token, it becomes to a point where it desensitizes, you know, the general public. And that's why, you know, when you have all these mass killings everywhere, you're in the ghetto, poor neighborhoods or whatever, and you never hear about it. But the moment one rich kid gets shot or goes out on a rampage, all of a sudden it's a national tragedy.
And all those cool shows like Hannibal and
it really is.
Dexter and everything, it's all about, you know, the rape and mutilation of women, you know?
Yeah, because the, you know, white rich kid committing a crime is so out of character in quotes.
Right, that's because... Marks.
But the thing is, are we really more violent than we were 50 years ago, 100 years ago? Or is it just because the armies are so sophisticated now that we have less people to send to the fields? I mean, think, you know,
that's a good point. That's a good point.
You know, they were so tired. The kings were so tired in Europe of having all their army, you know, hanging out and
send
just...
Send all these brutes to kill the infidel in the Holy Land.
You know, it was
but the difference here, and this has always been my point about the whole gun control issue. I know it busts people's brains every time I mention it, but the truth of the matter is, technologically, it's not like before in the days of the kings and queens. You have one tongue killing machines out there in a small little gun.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's give a shout out to Nelson from my class. He's a bit of a nut gun.
Oh, yes.
And
again, I want to say this.
Half the people this dude killed were with a knife.
The other thing that I want to say, too, is, you know, and this is what I keep repeating to all these gun lovers, is what are you going to say to the Richard Martinez of the world right now who have lost their kids? You know, how do you justify having your gun and them losing their kids?
Well, you know, they're right about the statistics that, you know, the guns, I mean, are you going to ban all guns? Then there'll be a black market in guns. Anyway,
right.
They're not going to disappear.
But if the justification is to have guns because of our freedoms and we want to prevent, you know, the government from taking over. Well, come on, we got drones and all that.
Please,
you
right? We have a chance against the SWAT team. Not really. That's true.
Oh, I think
but you know what? It's on the side.
Colorado. I think we struck a nerve.
I really do think, I'm not sure that it would actually have a direct impact on reducing the violence. It might save some lives and that might be good enough for me, you know? Sure. But it's not the underlying problem because a lot of violence is
you
with
wanna
knives
ask a question on the air?
Clubs and you name it.
So, oh, okay. Yeah, well, we got a caller.
A question? Okay.
We have a caller and we're going to put him on the air. Just reminder that you cannot curse or you know,
I believe
say
that, you know, if there's somebody that goes crazy
you know,
and they want
to
go after some people,
but,
they're going to do
let
it. Whether it's with a gun, with a car, with a knife, they're going to find a way to do it. And I think the question should more be, what in society is making people crack?
Okay, my name's TJ, and
hey, TJ.
A long time ago, I heard a phrase or not phrase or saying, actually, and it said, if guns don't kill people, then why don't we just send soldiers instead of soldiers with guns to war? And it just made me think that, do you think the overabundance of guns in America is the reason why there's violence, or is it the culture of guns that there's violence?
Great question. Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
It may be a combination of both, in my opinion. My field of study is psychology and anthropology. And when you look at the culture that we have nowadays, when you look at the media, everything is so desensitized that, you know, it's glamour to have a gun and go out there shooting and doing all that kind of stuff. So the way I look at it, it's a combination of both. Dr. Balick, your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, you know, and like what you were saying, I mean, we're kind of, you know, we're running here on a pointing the microphone at the speakerphone here.
It's right, not
very,
right, right.
Very high tech. If you're imagining it on some kind of shiny glass table, you know, like, not really. Furniture from the 80s here. So yeah, you. I think the point is very well made. That slogan is just a silly marketing slogan. You're absolutely right to think that it's silly. And let us just remind ourselves that the NRA is not, the National Rifle Association is not a lobby for gun owners. It is a lobby for the gun industry.
Correct.
Yeah,
that's where everybody gets confused.
Mm-hmm. They don't care about the interests of the individual gun owners, what there may be. They're selling guns. That's what they're paid to do, to justify that sort of thing. Hence, they spin all this stuff. But yeah, there are so we're so well armed, you know, and that is somewhat that makes it available, isn't it? Yesterday, some kid shot somebody in the face too with a neighbor's gun. The guns are everywhere, right?
Yeah, yeah. And you gotta say that it's much easier to kill somebody with a gun because you don't have to actually touch the person than with a knife. Because in France, where I come from, we since a little while ago, like a good 20 years ago, we don't have the right to have firearms.
Without a serious license. And we're not done. Yeah, we will come back.
And we'll we are talk. There.
No, no, we'll continue about this point. Yeah.
The point is that if you don't have a firearm, you know, there are so many accidents. I remember my friends, you know, being shot in the butt and stuff. Sorry. In the rear by firearms because people, you know, they were like 16 and drunk and playing with the firearms of the parents. And, you know, so you don't have a gun. Killing somebody becomes much more personal and you have to come much closer to that person.
You have to plan it out.
And then, you know, believe me, by the time you go that close, you start thinking about it again.
And we can play the game like I played in class. I mean, related to that, right? Where I ask people, what's the country where there's not as much, but still significantly number two in terms of kind of domestic deaths, murders, in the world. Oh yeah, if the French were well armed, they would all be dead by now.
Russia.
Nobody guesses the right country. So that's in our
Colombia.
No, I'm talking about rich, stable countries.
Right, England.
So. Well, in case in point,
tell us already.
Switzerland.
Because
they all have guns in the house.
Exactly.
One of my best friends and brother in Oakland, Orville. We go back and forth on the whole gun thing. Okay, and I told him, I said, well, what about Japan? They don't have any guns in Japan, but the killings in Japan are knives. Yeah. You know, it's straight up front, personal.
Like in France,
you know, but then again, Japan is a little bit more safer than it is in the U.S.
Sure, there's a few. You have to go into war-torn countries to have as much violence. But again, I mean, it's not.
I don't know about
a lot of it is, yeah, it's people killing their girlfriends. Again, it's not like America is not a war zone. If you're in middle class or upper middle class, you know, America is a very safe place generally. So there is a degree, and I suffer from it too. Don't get me wrong. You know, I have a gun in the house because I'm afraid about that crazy dude that's going to show up in the house, and I do not know ninjutsu,
right,
you know,
right.
And I do not know my gun throwing, my knife throwing abilities are.
But you have educated you have educated yourself. You have educated yourself on the operation of the weapon, and have also instructed your kids about it.
And I don't mess with this.
See, most people here don't do that. Yeah. You know, they just go ahead and buy a lockbox, put the gun in the lockbox, and they think that it's okay. You know, well, surprise, you know, your kid can easily open up that lock and wind up shooting themselves or shooting somebody else.
It's a bit of a circular argument. If we could have less guns everywhere, if we would reduce the gun culture that is reinforced so powerfully all the time with our media, that source of power, if we didn't have the kind of a penis envy going on with it and that sort of stuff, then things would be much better, no doubt. But, I mean, it's arguing about should we allow fully automatic assault rifles every time we're shooting in the schools is not solving our problem. There is an underlying violence that would have perhaps been somewhat mitigated with less guns, because, like she was saying, you know, easier to kill with a gun than with a knife. But would it completely solve the problem? Certainly not. And I think these numbers will speak to it too. So what are you jumping around all the time?
Well, first of all, there's a bug and it's freaking me out.
Well, I can't help you there.
Sure. Okay,
just a bug. Bugs are good people.
No, they're not. They're evil. They're the ones we should be afraid of.
Oh, look.
Okay, but anyway.
You jumped.
Not anymore.
Okay, run, sorry. Run. Sorry, listen. So,
sorry, listen.
When I think of, like, a person who's gonna shoot somebody else, I think of, like, you know, in a horror movie or in, like, a Superman movie where they're all, like, yeah. But, whenever I try to watch my YouTube videos, there's always this
one commercial.
Okay, I swear, it's the worst. It's like, there's this little girl, right? She's playing hide and seek with her brother. She goes into a closet. She finds the gun. Yeah. She doesn't know what it is. And she's like pretending. Yeah, it's loaded and she doesn't know. And she's like pretending.
My point.
She's pretending to, you know, like she's making pew pew sounds. And then her brother comes in and scares her and she accidentally shoots it. And it's really sad. But
there are a lot of accidents like that.
Yeah.
But,
and that's lack of education.
Exactly. Yeah, like that's totally the parents' fault. You don't keep a gun loaded in a closet. You know? Yeah.
Because a lot of parents with like a lot of things, instead of daddy.
Loaded gun.
Daddy, I'm talking.
Right.
A lot of times the parents, they don't want to tell them because they're afraid that it's going to make them want to use
now,
it more.
Now, one of the arguments there, and Tyler might be able to brief us on this, but one of the arguments on this latest gun shooting, and, you know, this one kid basically saying that he was being bullied or rejected by women and all that. Now, we do have a culture of bullying kids in school.
Oh, yeah.
Like Columbine.
It doesn't work.
Columbine.
Not that, you know, that justifies what he did, but you've been going to school. What's happening in school? A lot of that going on, isn't it?
Okay, so I used to go to Glen Ridge, and then now I changed schools, but they're always, like, every single day, they're always, like, a bunch of no bullying stuff, but it doesn't work at all. Like, there was the day before my last day at school, there was this giant fight in the cafeteria, and the teachers, it took them, like, 5 minutes to actually
notice.
Like, the fight was going on for 5 minutes, and there were teachers in the cafeteria. Yeah. And it was between, like, two girls. One of them was bullied, the other one was the bullier, and she got the bullied, she just was fed up with it, and so she, I guess attacked the other person, and she was the one who ended up getting in trouble, even though the other person was the one who was bullying her.
Now, this kind of stuff happens on a daily basis, right?
Yeah.
Well,
there's fights like once a week.
When we were kids, in my very French,
well, I think
very French, very rich Catholic.
My mom was a gangster.
No.
I
was not a gangster. But that's how we solved our problems. And, I mean, on a daily basis, there were fights all around. I mean, everywhere. You know, you were not happy with somebody, you just...
Yeah, but you took it to the backyard because typically you couldn't do it in front of
No. Everybody was doing it in the recreation area, in the courtyard, and everybody was surrounding the two people that were fighting, like in...
Right, that's the way it used to be.
Movies. Nobody was hiding anything. And it took, again, 5 minutes for the teachers who probably thought, yeah, that's good, you know, good fight is good, it's going to serve them well.
There's a complete level of bullying now because you have... these distinct groups.
Yeah,
and
one
thing that I did see not too long ago was, and it may have been a somebody interviewing these kids, and they were talking about that now the cool thing is to be mean to each other, and particularly on the female side.
Yeah. That's actually one of the things why we banned Disney and Nickelodeon in my house. They can watch our movies, they can watch depending different things, right? This culture of nastiness.
Yeah.
Right.
Not to be... That's
public school
for you.
Basic respect.
That was Glenn.
That's all. And, no, it's one rule.
And again, I'm not justifying what this guy did over there because obviously he's old enough to know better.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we have to look at that because later on, let's say this starts from the when they're kids, you know, their development. I mean, the whole attitude towards life.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just like the specific gun regulation is an important issue to discuss, but not the core issue here. Exactly. The same thing is, you know, that idiot, you know. I don't know what to use, you know, because the kind of natural language I'd use for somebody like this, right. I cannot say on the radio.
Beep it out.
Yeah, but poor Jesse will have to beep everything out. The problem was with his, for me, again, my focus here is with what the culture that breeds more and more of these. And how his opinions in his manifesto led him to do an act of extreme violence, and very few people will go that far. But the opinions, the basic view of the world that he took to its ultimate extreme are pretty widespread, actually.
Right.
Yeah, at my public school, Winter widespread. Park High School, there's two types of fights. The first one is online, where anybody bullies anyone really badly and nobody cares, and there's no control over it at all. So even if they do care, they can't actually do anything about it. And the only other option is... it's always, or nearly always, between two girls. So,
well, girls are under a lot of pressure. That's kind of
one of the things. So, I mean, it's like, I feel like a person who would say, "Oh, girls aren't going out with me, so that means I have the right to kill them." It's like they have no leg to stand on
because he feels entitled to any woman he wants. He's a rich white guy.
Those kinds of people need to be, like, tarred and feathered and then, like, burned to death.
Re-educated. But look at the numbers. Here, let me rattle these numbers I got in front of me.
Wait, no.
Oh, God.
Okay.
My attempt at patriarchal
Excuse me. You talk 90% of the time.
What?
Between you and Mommy, there's no getting a word in.
I know.
It's impossible. Okay, anyway. In middle school, everybody agrees middle school is the worst. And in middle school, girls, they get mean. Mean girls, haha. Mm. But anyway, most of the time when the person is cyberbullied, it's by people like that they know who were apparently their friends.
Mm? Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. I mean, there seems to be a lot of backstabbing between people that a priori are not... Why are they doing it to each other? Why?
Today, there were these people who, in our new school, one of the people, they took, like, a picture of another girl, and they changed it so that it looked, like, creepy and stuff, and they sent it to everybody,
that goes back to the way they're growing up. And I blame parents, plain and simple. You know, whatever excuse they have, both work, we got too much stuff. There's no excuse. If you have the kids, make sure they're being, taught right.
That's pretty easy.
That's the main responsibility.
But
I mean,
it never happened.
As a former flight attendant, and you guys are going to Europe now, as a former flight attendant, I just wanted to grab the parents by the neck and shake them up because they would just let the kids do whatever they want.
Yeah.
I enjoy it, that I got to share. You know, I have this weird perversion.
You're bad. You're bad.
Don't say that on the air.
I like it. I sit there and these misbehaved kids, I love misbehaved kids. I enjoy it. I watch the parents squirm, everybody around huffing and puffing, and I'm like, you little monster.
Yeah, but you know, that's how luggage that's going to Paris will end up going to Tokyo.
Well,
remember
I
that.
Do, you know, fine.
Remember
you know,
that.
Mine are relatively well behaved, you know, and I insist
on
that.
The flight attendant or someone else on the plane might redirect some luggage for some misbehaved kids.
It's done.
You're on the job, too. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, I did that for 20-something years, and I can tell you that, you know, just basically going back to the parental thing is, it's really the responsibility of the parents, regardless of what's the new thing out there, the internet, whatever, to just guide the kids. Yes.
There is actually, I could even look it up if I was asked, but there's been, I've read some articles on this actually over the years, and what's interesting, the parents have One of the things that has changed in recent times are that the parents have less and less influence relationship with the kids. So the degree of how kids are what kids are learning from their parents as opposed to what kids are learning from their peers,
yeah,
or from all of these disembodied entities on the internet, and I'm a prime geek and I'm all for it, etc., but I realize that there's like every technology, like just like guns, you know, there's a lot of dangers involved from them. So parents have way less influence than they used to on their kids. So it's not easy, and that comes from the way we work way longer hours than ever before.
Oh yes.
By far, like in ancient times, medieval times, any time in history, you know, we have all of these competing influences that we never had before. So I ban cable. That's pretty easy. I recommend it, quite frankly. Really, there's better stuff out there. But you can only isolate so much, you know. And we were, again, let's talk about privilege. You know, we were able to pull our daughter out of her school and put her into a
private
school. It's a cheap private school because it's parochial, but you know, yeah, got to compromise.
Yeah, but yeah.
Still, that's amount of money that we can spend. So we have this privilege that other people don't. So yeah, it's always a mix there, and I'm focusing on the societal influences. Sure, parents should try, you know, be reasonable, but I think that is a bit of a, you know, even rich parents, even members of the leisure class with whose one member of family is not working, typically still today a woman, though not always, you find that they don't necessarily intervene that much with the behavior of their kids either, you know. So how can we ask it of two people in the working class, you know, working three jobs each, and sending their kids to a failing public school or to a fake but yet failing charter school, etc. Just saying. But here's some data I just wanted to throw, because the context is the issue. You know, why can women get all angry about harassment and they deserve the right to be angry and concerned, and men not so much, and this campaign of hashtag yes all women complains that, yeah, I know you might be a good guy, but you don't understand what it is to live in my shoes as a woman today, and like Charlotte was saying, not necessarily better before, maybe even worse, right? Women were constantly abused in the past too. So here, more than one in three women will experience rape, violence, and or stalking at the hands of an intimate partner in their lifetimes, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe that's right, that what once was considered to be a really horrible night that you wish you didn't, you would have gotten out to, today we actually consider it to be a sex crime.
Yes.
And that's maybe a good thing, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm kind of happy with that. You know, my friends know I'm like concerned with my daughter here, 12-year-old, you know, and pretty soon she'll be going out the house by herself, and she'll probably be packing massive heat, you know?
Not happening.
How many automatic assault rifles do you think she's going to be carrying around with her?
She's not going out by herself.
Throw knives, axes, you know? Bayonets.
407-646-2915. If you have any questions, call us here at the studio. We are taking questions. And we're also playing some music. So here we go.
Wait, I didn't even finish my numbers.
Oh, there you
go. Stop.
No.
It's my show after all. The girls are out, so I can assert some paternal authority now that I'm in the majority again. 85% of intimate partner... I wouldn't have it any other way. Strong women. 85% of intimate partner violence victims are women. So you see the context. It's not balanced. Right. We are not so concerned, you know?
What about the incidence of men? Those are not reported actively.
No, yes, they are. You know, they're much less, you know. 40% of mass shootings started with the shooter targeting his girlfriend, wife, or ex-wife.
Mm-hmm.
40% start like that, you know, from the cuckoos who shoot mass shooting there. In nearly 60% of mass shootings, the gunman killed the current or former spouse, partner, or other family members, right? Domestic violence, domestic abuser who has access to a firearm is more than 7 times more likely to kill his partner, to the point, right, mm-hmm. that it's easier to kill your partner with a gun than with a knife, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and the leading cause of death for women at the workplace is homicide. most often at the hands of an intimate partner. So once again, that angry guy who feels that if she doesn't love me anymore, she cheated on me, she chucked me out like yesterday's garbage.
And it's her fault.
That means it's her fault, and I can punish her for it. And maybe then the media comes along and kind of reinforces the fact that women, well, when we see them, they are, you know, either at the side of their man, or being persecuted by him, or being even in a positive sense of being a victim. You know, like Feminist Frequency on YouTube gets a lot of heat.
Positive sense of being a victim?
Well, not she's not being attacked, but actually the nice guy is... most women will be saved, the damsel in distress, right? So the hero gets to save them. You don't see a lot of women saving guys.
We are watching Buffy again with Talia.
Buffy is a notable exception.
No, there was a very funny time where their friend, the guy, which I forgot his name because I'm also senile, he's bullied by a bigger guy, and Buffy comes and threatens the guy and basically kicks him in the face. And
what?
And her male friend comes and say, oh, why did you do that? Now I feel like so bad, you know, right, having to be rescued by a girl and stuff like mm-hmm. that. So there is also, like, all your numbers, I think you can find them, and even worse, on TV and in shows and series and stuff like that. Do you remember, like, maybe 2 years ago, there was a big statistical survey that had come out. It was on one of our blogs on feminism, and they counted all the every single time a woman was maltreated or raped or in a dangerous situation because of a male.
No. It's all the
outstanding.
Time. All the
it's
time.
Outstanding.
Little else.
Ridiculous the amount. And men never, and if they ever are, you know, they react like Buffy's friends. Right. Oh, yeah, what is your place, you woman, too? So it's like so part of our society and our culture that, in fact, when your kids watch TV and they watch that from day one, you know, women, they are usually badly treated, and it's
they are the
yeah.
innocent
normal.
Victims, or the
or
sluts
fault.
Asking for
yes, exactly. It's
right,
fault.
And then you have so and girls slut shame each yeah. other too, so they reinforce their. I mean, women sure. participate often in the male domination
yeah.
too.
So we might have better laws, and you know, some people might have better judgment and are more afraid of cops and stuff. But in reality, we are not far from the Middle Ages. Eh? It's still the same kind of
no,
cultural
we're just better
concept.
Equipped.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, exactly. We are richer, so we have more guns.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So changing that, like changing a society that, you know, promotes guns and promotes violence all over into a society where, oh no, violence is bad is impossible. There is no way you can do that.
No,
either
it's a
you're
gradual,
non-violent
I
or
think a lot
you're
of it is
violent.
Consciousness. One of the things
and you have
is
to
like
accept
in,
it.
To raise boys to be cognizant of that, to see that. I mean, to break the boys' club of Hollywood so
right.
that it changes, so that we don't have such a completely sexist, important nexus of culture, which is the media.
I think the media reflects this society, which I'm sorry to say is extremely patriarchal. Is one of the most patriarchal societies.
I posted an article about it actually that they're overwhelmingly all a boys' club and a pretty old school boys' club at that, Hollywood broadly defined.
Mm-hmm.
So again,
what about
there
the
were
rest
some
of
women
the
on the board saying like, wait a minute, why are we producing no movies with lead? Why is it you decide, they decide? Actually, there's been some work on that a woman lead will not do well commercially. Who knows? You know, look at actually in that sense. I mean, people are talking about it. Hunger Games. Initially, they thought that nobody's going to watch a movie with a girl, the hero.
I think the kids are changing,
well,
though. I mean,
but
that
also has to deal with the producers
exactly.
and the writers, because if the person that's writing the script is basically just favoring men as the heroes, and the media actually producing it, then what do you have?
Yeah, take a risk,
you know.
Actually, it's very good because all the boys can like, oh, she's like really good looking and stuff, and all the girls can say, oh, she's my idol.
But you know, that's the other problem too. We're in a society where if you're not good looking, if you're not rich, you're not worth anything.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we teach our kids today. And it transcends back to the bullying and all these, you know, messed up things. And again, I mean, that guy in California didn't have really an excuse for what he did. But we have to look at ourselves, and we have to look at, you know, the parents. We have to look at particularly our lawmakers who are probably just sitting back right now going, oh, this is going to blow off. So why even bother touching the topic? Because we'll have NRA on our back and, you know, the freedoms and all that kind of stuff.
Making people miserable has become a significant part of our economic model.
Right.
Punkonomics, we bring it back to economics.
Yeah, yep,
so
exactly.
Making everybody. The famous feminist statement about, feminist economic statement was how, you know, we took away women's self-esteem, you know, in the sense of you have to look like you're 14-year-old all your life, you have to have no hair, you have to have perfect body, you have da-da-da-da-da, all those things, right?
And now it's happening to men.
And then
now we have to share.
Now for men too, that caught up on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You take away your self-esteem, and we sell it to you back piece by piece. So here's a cream, here's a pill, here's a thing, here's a that. So, yeah, I mean, there is markets don't always work perfectly. I mean, if there's an opportunity to make money off of people's misery, and we should know that all studies for decades already have shown that Americans are remarkably miserable, considering that, you know, we got it pretty good overall, most of us, right? Compared to other parts of the world. Yet we are miserable. A lot of Americans will go abroad, maybe on school, on a college, you know, trip, and live in some village in a third world country. And one of the first things they all say when they come back is like, my God, those people are happy.
Right.
They help each other.
I'll tell you why we are so miserable.
What's
is because we work way too much.
Yes.
We don't have enough vacation. Yeah. We, you know, if we're not doing three jobs, then we're doing one job, and our job is 80 hours a week. And then, you know, you get a promotion, and, oh, guess what? You have to work even more.
And our depression and misery gets taken care of by one pill.
Several, actually.
Several as you get older.
Shopping sprees to feel good, and you know, slave
comfort
made...
Comfort eating, which ruins our
health. Eating, right.
Comfort eating.
Lots of salt and grease.
Lots
right
of
here.
Money in that, too.
Comfort eating.
Chips.
A systemic failure. You know, again, we're not, we can do better. Here, here's as positive as I'm willing to go before we hit some tunes.
Okay, but
yeah?
No, before we hit some tunes, I want to get back to your thing that, you know, the woman always has to be beautiful, but that's not a trait of our society. That's a trait of our humanness.
But I'm
you know,
also,
you can go back as far as you want in
but,
the
but
history
it also goes
of,
for men nowadays, too. I mean, the pressure
well,
is on for
it,
men.
Yeah.
Everybody
big
wants
time.
To be like the
that's
most
the
beautiful
person. The funny thing
is
that the beautiful male culture is a culture of rich people.
Right.
But it's always been. Well. You can go as far as you know, as we know culture, you know, 10,000 years, and you will find that low culture, men don't have to be pretty. In the high culture, men and women have to be pretty. In the low culture, women have to be pretty.
But I can take this that a little bit further, though. I had a professor, a cultural anthropology professor. We were kind of hosting the same conversation that we're having. And it was kind of like, well, you know, men are this, men are that. You know, there's a image of women and there's an image of men. But when it comes down to pairing the two, it seems like, you know, the men have to be rich, you know, to be happy with a woman, and that woman has to be pretty. Well, I brought up Hugh Hefner, and everybody went into a rage. Oh, why do you bring that up? And I'm going like, well, because that's what I'm seeing today's society. The man can be butt ugly, like, you know, Donald Sterling, the prime example, okay?
Yeah.
And he's dating a beautiful woman. I mean, let's be real here. When it comes down to intimacy, I don't think that's going to be cutting it there. Of course, you know, you got Viagra and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, would that same woman go out with a guy who's working at a factory? I don't think so. You know, she'll probably turn around and go like, huh, are you
exactly.
kidding?
Absolutely.
You know, where's his shoes? Where's his belt?
Well,
where's his watch?
Because the male has to provide and the woman has to be pretty. So the prettier the woman, the better built the woman, the better kids she's going to have. This is like
right.
in brain in our salvage
but you see,
structure.
if we're looking for equal rights all the way around, then the women should provide
no
too.
Rights.
See, the same thing you just said needs to go to the other side.
It's never going to be equal,
see,
right? It's impossible.
But it's the thing. Well, that becomes, it's difficult. Now, equal, well, they should
unless
be equalized
we have a brain
actively.
In a,
I mean, women
aquarium.
Have different roles in society, basically childbearing and maintaining their equipment, which is more costly and to do over their lives. So, but in the sense they're not equal because they can't be because, for example, a lack of proper healthcare in America leads to a tremendous burden on women unequal to men. The fact that women will have to take more time off because traditionally they take care of the kids or
right.
they get pregnant. And well, you right. know, we want that's survival of the race. I mean, we don't.
True, true, true. Get, but then at the same time,
so it's unequal in
court,
that sense. But we could provide for, like, in most civilized countries, you have you know, support. You have healthcare, decent healthcare. You have childcare. You have a maternity leave. You have.
But then again, in court, and I'm take as an example, California. Men are being raped, literally.
How can
financially,
you rape a man?
I'm talking about economically.
Oh,
and,
okay.
and men do get raped. Come on.
Yeah, they do.
Men do
oh,
get raped
yeah,
all the way around.
Yeah.
People just don't want to talk
minor,
about
not
it.
By a woman.
The figures are
well,
there. The figures are there.
Probably, yeah, but very much.
Not by
tiny
women.
Minority.
How many, there is no way you
yeah,
can
you
rape
can.
A man.
It happens. It happens.
Really?
It happens.
Okay,
yes.
You have to explain that to me
off the air.
Yeah. Off the air. Yeah, I could definitely
it's
explain that to you off the air.
It's a very small percentage.
But when you look at the laws, okay, in particular California, you know, let's say the woman walked into the marriage with nothing. He already had whatever, okay? And all of a sudden, she decides that marriage is not her thing.
Actually, in the common law, that's not the case.
Well,
separate.
I'll put it to you this way. There's a large percentage of men out there, okay, either by their fault or not their fault, by default. In court, they're not equal at all. And there's been plenty of cases where it shows that a woman who's basically been able, who's living in, she got the house, okay? She's being held by her parents. And I'm telling you this because I know one case, I talked to somebody in California recently. And she's basically got the child care through her parents, okay? But she's hitting her husband for child care and not paying her parents.
Well, he's not.
You know,
mean,
so there's these little games and then...
Every system can be played, and some people
right.
will play it. On
oh.
the other hand, you know, you do have to have a
WPRK can help you.
Of the, you know, the divorce court. You can't live without it.
So, okay, once in a while, you know, women have the upper hand. And that
exactly.
happens in California.
And it might happen in California every now and then. But overall, there's a long history and context.
I'm just trying to
know.
Be fair. I'm just trying to be fair
yeah,
because, it's just like men being raped and all this kind of stuff. The numbers are not there because people don't want to talk about
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
it's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so
yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to bring that perspective because I always see, and not that you guys are saying it one-sided, but in conversations like this, it's always one-sided.
Mm-hmm.
And
I agree
all
with
these
you.
Other things are never brought to the front, either because it's kind of sticky or people just don't believe that it does exist.
Yeah.
But with how, when you were saying like how people like are having to be pretty and stuff, a lot of people, I mean, it feels nice to be really pretty and stuff. Like, everybody wants to be, like, the Disney princess of everybody else. I mean, it's, like, human. But I wanted to say about, I heard that there was this, I think, Japanese girl who, she was, like, really, really ugly. And so she got plastic surgery to get, and she, so like she was pretty and stuff, and she got married, and their like kids were really, really ugly. And
I remember that
right.
story.
And
the
dad, the husband
yeah.
sued,
right?
yeah. sued, yeah. and yeah, he right. gained like a bunch of money, like nearly
yeah.
all her money. And she had to keep the kids,
oh,
so
okay.
she was like, she had no money. She had four kids, and she had no husband.
Yeah, I did hear about that.
Yeah,
was it in Japan or in China? I forgot.
Okay.
I can't.
I don't remember.
I think,
no,
yeah, I'm pretty
yeah, yeah.
sure it was in Japan.
But anyway,
yeah, that
you know?
I raised my case. I mean, the woman, you know, this
though
is
in
like,
the past, it was
nobody
it
wants
so,
to have ugly
uniform,
children.
You know what I mean? And unimportant. I mean, did people in the past didn't expect? Sure, they want pretty women, but there were all kinds of pretty women. If somebody was pursuing, you know, wooing. To use an old-fashioned word, a woman in her 20s in the Middle Ages, he didn't expect her to look like a plastified 14-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
Because they didn't invent it. They had
but
not invented
right, so
it
wasn't
yet.
That kind of uniform, photoshopped obsession
oh,
that
yeah.
is, I think, really kind of designed
come
into
on,
going
Mini.
Back to
really?
This notion of the impossible standard.
It
you know?
Was.
It wasn't the impossible standard. It
yes,
was,
it was.
People liked, beauty was different in different times and people had different
and
tastes.
And it was always one standard, you know, throughout history, throughout different cultures and stuff. There is always one standard of beauty and you
it
have
changes,
to confine to it mm. Or you're ugly. That's
I actually,
it.
I'm
you
reading.
You don't have a choice.
Tali brought up a point. She says that it, you know, it, it feels good to be pretty. I mean, I'm sure most women believe that too. But now, let's flip it to the other side. Imagine, and you know, that rich kid is a pretty good looking guy, so he can't use that excuse. But imagine some guy who's not really good looking and just, you know, looks down himself. Mm-hmm. The images on TV alone would send him into depression. You know, I'm not saying that's justifiable to go into shooting
There's
people.
No woman heroes, no black heroes, nobody even middle class hero. They're all rich too. I mean, you don't can't see anybody who's less than a millionaire on television. I mean,
well, you can.
Wait, listen.
It's difficult.
It's difficult, very difficult.
But in
they all have class. Super cool houses.
Oh, they're supposed to be working class, but they live in a big house downtown, and you know, and only one parent.
You mean like the Crosbys, right?
Actually, but in I'm reading a book. It's called, well, it just came out like yesterday, and I'm so happy. It's called, what is it called?
City of Heavenly Fire.
City of Heavenly Fire. It's in the Mortal Instruments series by Cassandra Clare. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Okay. And there's a girl in it named Maya, and I had honestly no idea she was black. Mm-hmm. And then I did not know.
And how did you find out?
She discusses like her eighth birthday party.
Her eighth birthday party.
She wanted like a Barbie birthday cake, and they didn't make, or they had like one black Barbie doll, but they didn't have all the party supplies to go with it. So she had like the like white blonde Barbie doll in her birthday cake, and all the like white blonde girls coming to her birthday, and they all were like laughing behind her back at her birthday.
So the author is clearly making a point,
right? Good for the author.
In the conversation that we're having, trying to do here too. Yeah, clearly.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to go into some music, and I guess this describes my mood most of the time.
Makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. Broken glass everywhere. People pissing on the stairs. You know they just don't care. I can't take the smell. Can't take the noise. Got no money to move out. I guess I got no choice. Rats in the front room. Roaches in the back. Junkies in the alley with the baseball bat. I tried to get away, but I couldn't get far, cause a man with a tow truck repossessed my car. Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. Standing on the front stoop, hanging out the window, watching all the cars go by, roaring as the breezes blow. Crazy lady living in a bag, eating out of garbage pails, used to be a fag hag. Such a dance to tango, skipped the life and dango. A Zirk Aunt Princess seemed to lost her senses. Down at the peep show, watching all the creeps, so she could tell her stories to the girls back home. She went to the city and got so did it. She had to get a pimp, she couldn't make it on her own. Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. My brother's doing fast on my mother's TV. Says she watches too much. It's just not healthy. All my children in the daytime, Dallas at night. Can't even see the game or the Sugar Ray fight. The bill collectors, they ring my phone and scare my wife when I'm not home. Got a bum education, double-digit inflation. Can't take the train to the job. There's a strike at the station. Neon King Kong standing on my back. Can't stop to turn around. Broke my sacroiliac. A mid-range migraine, cancer membrane. Sometimes I think I'm going insane. I swear I might hijack a plane. Don't push me. Call, I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under.
All right, Grandmaster Flash. That's right, just singing everything that's been going through my mind lately. Anyway, we're top of the hour here on Punkonomics. Remember, you can catch Punkonomics every Wednesday from 2 to 4 here on WPRK, Winter Park, Florida, the voice of Rollins College, and the best in basement radio. We're back with Dr. Benny Balak, a few minutes less. Dr. Balak wants to give us a couple of words of wisdom.
Yeah, just a couple of words of wisdom. Just most of them aren't mine even, yeah. So you'll be happy. But, So, and don't forget to find us on the internet, all social networks, more or less. It's all linked nicely up from punkonomics.org. If you want to join in the conversation, that'd be great. We post a lot of articles all the time also. So, you know, we talked about, did we cover it? Did we have a nice structure, organized structure? No, this is Punkonomics, isn't it? And that it is. So we had a little chat here. And I wanted to finish, the context is important. I just want to wrap it up a little bit, right? So it's not equal. And given people who've suffered over the years, who have been at the short end of the stick, who've been abused in one way or another, get to complain more than those who haven't. So, you know, that kid that did the shooting and felt that he was entitled to things, being a rich white guy, you need to shut up, most of the time at least. Or take your turn before you complain. And to finish, I want to read a few words of wisdom from this great poetic thinker, the late El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz, otherwise known as Malcolm X. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there is no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. Progress is healing the wound that the blow made. And they haven't pulled the knife out, much less healed the wound. They won't even admit the knife is there.
Okay,
thank you.
Wait.
Bye-bye.
Saying goodbye.
Wait, just quickly, the Mortal Instruments series, just saying, you might need to, be 12 or older, because it's not really for little kids, because it's got some, adult themes.
Don't worry about it.
Okay, Punkonomics. And remember, punkonomics.org. Bye-bye. We're running a blog. And what can I say? Bye-bye. Have a great week. Ciao.
Cheerio.
The preceding program did not reflect the views or opinions of this station, its management, or employees.
This is Oliver Stone. Thank you for listening to WPRK, Winter Park, Florida. There's no profit in this form of media. Enjoy it while it's still freeform.
True.